Position number 9416, reel 3.
Mr. Harry Smith, reel 3. You were telling me about how you went forward to examine the forward position of your battery. I wonder if you could continue.
Well, we just examined them in the same way as the rear guns. I looked in the breech, of course, and everything seemed to be all right. And I asked the man, how are the guns? He says, oh, they're in good firing condition. Therefore, we left and came back over all this broken country to the rear position, and the man departed and left me in full charge. The officer in charge said, now, there's going to be a raid on the German trenches tonight. I wouldn't like you to go into the dugout until the raid's finished. If you're required, then we know where you are. Before 1 o'clock in the raid took place from 11 p.m. until 1 in the morning. Just about midnight, the telephone rang. Will you send the fitter? The gun has gone out of action. So, being strange to the way, a signal was detailed to take me along.
This is to the forward position?
To the forward position. When I got there, my heart sank. The rods had all come out, and they wouldn't go back again. No. So I knew that the guns had been short of pressure.
Now, can you just explain this a bit more? Was this in more than one gun had gone like this?
The first night, there was only one gun firing. The second night, the second gun fired. They were being covered by one gun.
I see.
There were two guns there, but there was only one that had been firing.
So the one that had been firing, you say the rods had come out. Could you explain just what the rods were to a non-technical person?
Well, they... After a gun fired, the recoil was taken by rods which came out 4 feet and then gradually went back into the position ready for the next shell. In a case where the battery, where the pressure in the cylinders was not up to standard, they would not return. They stretched out 4 feet, and in so doing, ruptured all the packings. So therefore, the gun was out of action until the packings were restored and the pressure lifted in the gun.
Now, what was this pressure? You said the pressure had
It's pneumatic pressure. And it had... it forced the gun back again, you see. If the pressure wasn't up... When they fired, it came back very quickly, did the recoil of the gun. There always had to be a recoil, you see, even in the days of the spring guns. But their springs took it. But in this case, there were... there were rods that took this pressure, and if there wasn't the pressure wasn't sufficient, they came back very fast and then they return slowly.
How had the pressure to be maintained? How you say the pressure?
It was in the cylinder, you see, that worked these rods, and if the pressure wasn't strong enough, then the pressure was too low to bring the rods back.
But how did you keep that pressure high?
By hard work, pumping. There were no, in those days, there were no air cylinders. It would have been quite easy with an air cylinder. But you just had to do the job like blowing a tire up with a hand pump. But this was a, you sat on the trail and you had this, it was a fairly big pump with a long handle, about a yard long. And you kept pumping and pumping and pumping until the pressure got up. And the more efficient the gun, the harder the pressure as it came right up to the finishing 700 pounds a square inch. And that happened, the same happened on two occasions, the second night.
So, this had happened on the first night?
The first night.
What were the consequences of that? Did it affect the success of the raid? Would the battery get into trouble for this failure?
Well, I think the major would be called to task by the colonel to see what had happened. Why hadn't the gun covered the troops all the time?
Now, so you found this gun in that state. How long would it take you to repair a gun where the rods had come out and you needed new packing and new pressure?
Well, I was there until early in the morning, and the staff sergeant fitter of the old brigade came up, and we managed to get the rods back again, but they were not, it was not fit to go into action.
What about this packing you were talking about? What did you have to do to restore the
packing? Well, they had all the rods would be taken out and fresh packings put in.
What are packings, sorry?
Well, they were a sort of a rubber packing, and special packings for the job.
So you hadn't got this gun back into action?
No, he couldn't. He couldn't do anything at night because he couldn't show a light. You see, he was firing on the enemy. And any light shone, they'd have been seen.
So, did you work on this gun all the next day?
We managed to get it back into position, and then it was taken back to the rear position.
Now, you say that the next night, the same thing happened
yes.
to the other gun. Now, why hadn't anybody thought to check the pressure? Had they not realised that the pressure...
Well, nobody realised the pressure wasn't correct until... And these things happen, you see.
So
we just thought it were an odd one out the first night.
So when the second one went as well.
Well, there's something got to be done then. Fortunately, the weather was very fine at that time, and the staff sergeant fitter came along, and we examined every gun and worked on every gun. We were about 3 days before we got them all. Up to concept position, you see.
So the pressure on all the guns, front and rear.
They'd been neglected. We'll say that.
How long would it take for you to pump up the pressure on one gun? Because 700 pounds is a fair.
Well,
pressure.
It could be 20 minutes. You sat there 20 minutes and worked your backside all that time, you see. And your hand, and pressed and pressed and pressed. I was young in those days. I mean, I'd been spent now. And he was a jolly good chap, and we worked together, and he knew his job, and I knew my job, and we got him up. And I said that the guns then would be as efficient as any they were in the division, and they were.
Now, this was... It sounds like a fairly elementary mistake to make. I may be wrong in this, but from what you're saying, keeping the pressure up on the hydraulics
yes.
would seem to be...
Yes, it was neglect.
Now, why had it been that the previous fitter had let such a simple thing ruin the effectiveness of the battery? Could you...
Well, someone else should have answered that question. Those that were watching him work, they must have known he was slipping the job. Because it had to be done continuously, had that keeping the pressure up.
How often would the pressure have to be pumped up normally on each gun?
Well, if I went nearly every day to just check them, you see if they dropped any pressure.
Was there a dial?
Yeah.
Giving pounds per square inch.
Yes, you could read it with a meter, which was put on and gave you some, same as if you're testing a thing, you test anything with a meter.
Was it by any chance because this fitter might have been more used to the spring?
Yes, guns? I think he was short of experience.
So the hydraulic guns were more complicated.
They are more complicated. They needed the skill.
So the previous fitter would probably not be qualified.
No, I should think that. I think he might have taken charge after the fitter was killed. The fitter that was doing the job. It was a copper fitter, a teeper. He would kill a teeper.
So the original fitter for the battery, who probably knew, had been killed.
Had been killed.
And that this replacement...
Probably. I don't know, but I should think so. He were either that or dead lazy, or one of the two.
Now, was there anything else wrong with the guns? Had he neglected his duties in any other way on the guns?
Well, we stripped them all down, so anything that had been neglected... We didn't know because we stripped the guns down and built them up with new packings.
So this was at the same time as you pumped the pressure up, you stripped down every gun?
Yes. They were stripped down before we started. We went through every gun, the staff sergeant and myself, who were up here the 2 or 3 days. And fortunately, we were fine with them. We were working outside. And we started at the crack of dawn and we worked till it would arc.
Did you have help from the gunners to lift the heavier pieces during the stripping down?
No, we managed very well, two of us. Yes.
So you didn't strip it right down to the very basic parts of the gun?
We stripped all the working parts, the parts that mattered, you see. You didn't, the rifling, of course, we didn't do that because each gun were marked on the droop and jump of a gun, you see.
Could you explain that?
Well... Every gun had a difference, like every motor car had a certain amount of difference in them. And these had been measured through rods. I was fortunate later on, which it tells in that book, I was fortunate that I was in when they were tested, so I just know exactly what took place. And after a certain rifling had got worn too much, you see, they were replaced then. They were sent away, the guns, and the old rifling put in. We couldn't do it, of course.
And the
droop and jump of a gun, well, some guns, you set them on a target, say our target mainly was 2,300 yards, ordinarily. That was about the target. 500 yards were open sights. But after that, you see, you registered on this. It was a lovely instrument. And it set, suppose for instance, you set the target 2,300 yards. You looked at the marking on the gun and it says plus 11 or 12 yards, you see, 11. And you added that on. And then it's when it said minus, you took it off.
So that meant it would overshoot or undershoot?
Yes,
by
unless you put on what the register on the side of the barrel.
So the jump was if it was over and
yes.
The droop with it?
Yes. And they were all marked, the guns. But after they got a certain, if they got, say, about 20 to 25 above or below, they were sent away for the rifling.
Who would judge this? Would this be given by the observation officers? They'd say whether they were overshooting, would they? How would they know?
Yes, there was they observed the target, you see. They got something they laid, what they call laying the guns on. A lot of difference in some majors. There was one of our divisions where they only need to give 5 shots, but our chappie did have to do about 15 before he got on his target. So that was the difference, you see.
Now, you mentioned earlier that there were... You just said there was something lovely about the guns. What did you think about the guns as pieces of military engineering? Did you think they were a good gun? And if so, what was good about them?
Well, they were very good, were our guns. They were very accurate if they were kept up to it. But the German guns, their 5.9 guns, they didn't seem to have much work on them, but still they were very effective. They were a very, very good gun with the German 5.9. And they had a shield over the top, you see. The gunners, from shrapnel, they wouldn't be hit by shrapnel. Ours didn't go so far up, so anything that came down from the air could clobber our fellas. And that was one thing I admired about the German guns. I've seen them.
You also said that they didn't need so much work on them. Does that mean that you felt that although the 18-pound was a good gun, it needed quite a lot of maintaining?
Well, there were more instruments on them than the German guns for registering targets and that kind of thing.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, I should think it's like your motor car. If you get a Rolls Royce, like, you expect all these things on it. Or if you get one of these Minis, you don't expect the same thing.
So you feel that the 18-pounder was a better gun in all, do you?
Well, they were effective. And theirs were effective.
Much of a muchness, then?
Yes, I think they were pretty well up in artillery with the Germans, no question about it.
And the gun, was the 18-pounder mechanically reliable?
Yes. If, like I said, they were maintained, like a motor car, maintained, they were very reliable. And I think he got a certain amount of praise after did the major, because I could do no wrong for him. I'm going to say I could nearly get anything, because he'd had trouble before with this. I suppose he got a rousting from the colonel, and he would do, because all this were recorded. There were notices up many times about firing shot. I've said since I've been there this last year or two and seen all this lot, I'd rather have been in front of the guns that this fellow had than behind. I should have been more, I'd have been more serious behind, I think, because I'd have been expecting them to explode.
Now, this was, so the first 3 or 4 days with the unit, you spent the time largely with the other chap repairing and, renovating the
building. And then he was happy then, he knew it, somebody, because they were in charge of all the fitters, you see, with the, on all the batteries. There was 4 batteries of 223, and there were 4 batteries of 317. There were two brigades with that division.
So, now, can you tell me now about looking at what happened to you rather than the guns for a moment? You came to the unit. Can you describe the dugout you were given? Because you'd be given a dugout, were you? Or what, did you get to share a dugout?
No, I was given a dugout. It was just...
Where was it?
It was built into the hillside in this sunken road where the 4 rear guns were. And you got inside and you brought down the gas cover when you got in at night.
This gas cover was...
Yes, it sealed sealed the entrance.
Was it an effective seal?
Well, there were no gas in that particular nights while I were there, but it would be, otherwise I think it would have been scrapped. But that ground was sodden with gas in the morning. When the sun shone, if I'd sat on the grass, I'd have been gassed. You never sat on the grass in the morning when the sun was shining, because it brought it up. It was phosgene gas, you know, that had been fired from gas shells from the Germans.
And in the morning, the sun... How high would the gas reach up?
Well, perhaps 2 or 3 feet. See, you're clear when you're stood straight up.
So your gas, even though there were no active gas shells dropping, your gas...
You hadn't to sit on the grass, you hadn't to lay on the grass.
But also your dugout, you did actually need that shield, the gas.
Yes, you did.
Right, well, you got into the dugout. Could you describe it, what it looked like inside?
Well, it was a bit like a telephone box, about that size. When you got in, there wasn't room for anything else much. And they dropped this curtain, and that was it.
So it was only about 3 feet square?
Well, it would be perhaps about 6 foot.
Telephone box on its
yes,
side?
Yes, sir, yes.
So it was like a, almost like a coffin, didn't it?
Yes,
like
sir, it was.
And you'd just lie in there to sleep, would you?
Yes.
Did you have anything in there at all?
Well, no, nothing there.
Just bare earth?
No, bare earth.
What sort of food did you get during this period? Where would you get your food from?
Well, I was attached to a certain subsection, you see. That's what happened, and you get your rations from that subsection.
What can you remember about those rations?
Well, not a lot. There was stews, a lot of them, in a big Dixie many times.
So you get hot food?
Yes.
Even when you were at Engelbelma and in the front, you got hot food from the cookhouse?
Yes, it's fairly hot, you know, so hot as they could keep it, I suppose.
What was the stew like? Was it acceptable?
Well, it was when you were hungry. I wouldn't eat it today, but ate it then. You had to survive, you see.
So, well, that would be your midday meal, wouldn't it?
Yes, and your water bottle, you clung like grim death to that. That was a lifesaver. Proved it a few times to me, did that.
So how would you get your water ration?
Well, it used to come round every so often with a water can.
And you just filled?
Filled it up.
Could you have a drink at the same time, or would you just get the amount of a water bottle full?
Well, you just got your water bottle full. If you had a drink out of the water bottle, you went back again and filled up.
So you could have a couple of water bottles
yes.
full? Was that enough water?
Well, it had to suffice.
Would you get water from any other source, like a shell hole or anything like that?
Yes, we've had it from the shell holes. Later on in that, it'll tell you.
Now, we mentioned the food before. Did you get tinned food at all?
Yes, at McConaughey's. And pork and beans, they called it. There weren't much pork in, but there were plenty of beans.
What did you think of those?
Well, not much, but you're glad to have anything.
What about bread or anything like that? Did you get anything
else?
Well,
so many into a loaf. Not too much. No more than I can eat now at my age. Less, probably.
What about other things? Did you get things like... Did you get breakfast things like bacon?
I never saw any bacon.
What about cheese or jam? Butter?
Oh, sometimes you got a little jam. Plum and apple, and sometimes it came round with a rum ration.
How was that issued?
Well, about a little cupful, you know, a little like a shell cap. Many times they had a shell cap to bring it round.
So there wasn't enough to make you in any way drunk, or?
No, well, I didn't take it much because I know. First time I had some, I got a bit of dysentery, so I let that alone. Kept off that.
What about cigarettes?
Well, cigarettes I didn't smoke. I just smoked one and I didn't like it. And so they always queued up with when cigarettes were about. Chance I'd give them the cigarettes, you see. I'd enjoy the ration, but give it to somebody else.
Would you exchange it or give it? Was it a barter system, or would you just give it?
No, I'd give it to them.
I'll leave the other questions about battery life till later.
Yes.
I just want to ask a couple more questions about the events of that night when you went forward to the guns. This was the first time that you'd really been in action.
Yes.
And certainly you were right forward to the support.
Yes.
Could you tell me what impressions that night have left with you and your first experience of being, if not under fire, very close to the enemy in action?
Well, I had no idea I was so near. Being new, it were since, after I've been since the war, I realised what a dangerous position it was, but I didn't know before. I only knew that my idea was to get these guns right, and that was the main thing with me. It didn't matter what else was going on there, I'd got into a right state with this first job and everything going wrong.
As you went up, did you go up the communication trenches or were you taken across the top?
Went on a sunken road. Went through a sunken road where the batteries were firing across this sunken road.
What was the scene? What could you see ahead of you?
Well, I could see all these fairy lights. I could see the run of the front line. You could follow the line while the lights going up. It was marvellous. It was like being at the illuminations at Blackpool in places.
How did you feel? Were you nervous at all?
Well, it was an experience. You were a bit creepy, wondering what was going on. But I wasn't so nervous as all that. I mean, you might think I wasn't telling the truth, but I'm more concerned in doing the job. And
was the ground very broken up?
Yes, there was barbed wire, and of course we put his and of course we got fast in them and getting the barbed wire out. He fell. He were always falling down when he were going across this road.
Was there lots of shell holes? Was the ground well shelled in that area?
Yes, it was. It was broken up. Yes, it was broken up.
Now, after you'd got the guns tuned up with the other chap, what happened next? I believe you went on a course around about July 23rd. Could you tell me about that?
Yes, I was instructed to, a driver really, a driver was instructed to go with me to Bukesny. It was about 16 miles away, where there was a course set up for air recuperator guns.
Did you march there?
No, there was two horses allocated, one for the driver and one for me. And of course I'd never been on a horse in my life, and the horse knew it. And sort of being stupid, and had a real job for a while. And then of course when it got accustomed to me, it started going too fast, and the driver was calling out, "You'll need to stop it, we're going to get into trouble if wreck caps see it sweating, we'd be booked." But anyway, Red Caps weren't about.
What would you have been booked for?
Well, for neglecting the job. Overrunning horses. The horses were more valuable then than the men at that time. And if a poor horse were sweating, then it were your fault.
And that was your first time?
That was first time, and I couldn't sit down for a fortnight after it. So no saddle or anything, you were riding bareback. Anyway, I managed. But it was very good at this place. Food were good. The first time we'd had plum duff ever in the army. You know, the plum pudding and then the currant pudding.
Was this a proper school? Were you in barracks?
No, it was in a set-up place, a place like a barn. And we slept in this barn at night. It's an old barn there.
How many of you were there on this course?
Not a lot, I should think. Perhaps half a dozen.